From WXXI News in Rochester, this is Connections. Once upon a time, Rochester closed itself off from the waterway that built the city. Buildings on either side of the Main Street Bridge that you might remember cut off the view to the river. There was no place to go to access the river within the city. It's all changing, and we are fortunate to have with us some of the people who are helping to make that change this hour on Connections. Joining us in the studio, Michael Phillipson, who is the co-founder of Greentopia, Lisa Barron, who is the chair of Greentopia, and Tara Boggio, who is the senior business development manager at T.Y. Lin International and a member of the Eco District Committee. Thank you all for being here with us and joining us on Connections. You can join us, too, on the phone at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. On Twitter, at Evan Dawson, our producer Megan Mack is live tweeting again this hour, so you can interact with her and with us that way, and welcome her aboard to the show, too. We're thrilled to have her working with us here. So let's start off with the event that that sort of prompted us to have you in here today. On Wednesday, over at MCC, you guys held your third Greentopia Futures Summit. Let's start by recapping, what is a Greentopia Futures Summit?
Well, a Greentopia Futures Summit, we've had three of them now. They're really... it was a gathering of thought leaders from across North America, including the United States and Canada, to really talk about how we can propel our cities into the future using green districts. And we're about to begin the first green district, the first eco district, as we call it, in New York State, right here at High Falls. So it was a really opportune time for the community and for staff and interested community members to come hear about what that actually means and how these green districts can actually help a city propel itself into the future.
Tara, you're a member of the Eco District Committee. We have seen over the years, you know, I remember growing up, nobody even came down to High Falls. I barely knew that the falls were there when I was growing up because there's no reason to come down here. And we've seen over the decades, development come, and in some cases, development go, and questions about how much public money versus private money should be put in. Where do things stand now in this neighborhood, and what's happening now with your committee?
So our committee went out to Portland, Oregon, and got trained, really, in what an eco district is and how that framework kind of gets put together. And so we had representatives from the city and the county and private developers, MCC and not-for-profits, and we really just went out to learn what we want our eco-district to be, at least start that conversation. And what we do know for sure is that we want it to be centered around the High Falls and around the river. And as you mentioned, for so long, we've kind of not turned our backs to it, but just kind of taken what we needed from the river and from the gorge and not really enjoyed it the way we could. And so we know we want that to be our focal point. We're really in the very beginning stages of putting this eco-district together. It's about a two-year process, really, to kind of put this whole plan in place. And we're going to be starting very shortly by hiring a full-time eco-district coordinator who will be really kind of the feet-on-the-ground person. They'll work with the eco-district critical team and all the stakeholders that we start to reach out to. But they'll really kind of put the plan together and start giving it some meat.
And there's a $250,000 grant that came in.
Yep, NYSERDA sponsored the event, the initiative, and really we were very fortunate to have that. When we went out to Portland, two things people were very envious of. There were 11 cities there that time being trained in this incubator event, and all the other cities were incredibly envious of our funding source because a lot of them are trying to start from really having no money at all, and two was that none of them could tout having the natural asset that we have with the river and the gorge, and they just thought we were very lucky.
And we forget that. I'm always amazed when I bring people to town who have never been here before. One of the things that I always do is I take them behind the station here, and we walk out on the Pont de Rennes, and I show them a waterfall. I'm like, I didn't know this was here. Why don't you people promote this more? I had a friend who was going through just on the train this morning, and he was tweeting me pictures as he was going on the bridge over the river above the falls there, just of the scenery. Why are we just waking up to this now?
This is Lisa Barron. I think in part it's because it was sealed off by industry for so long and used. You know, we used our place to make products instead of celebrating the place for what it is. And now that the products are gone or moved to other places, we are left with the place. The place never changes. To invest in an asset like High Falls, it's basically a no-brainer. It won't go bankrupt. It won't move its headquarters. High Falls will be here forever. And so to invest public and private resources in developing and creating green space that the entire city, the entire region can use and appreciate and enjoy, it's just a really sound investment.
And yet, just to play devil's advocate here, we've seen investments in High Falls in past years that haven't necessarily worked out as well as one might have hoped. I remember all the hoopla during the Johnson administration when the visitor's center went in and the restaurants went in and we had Jillian's down the street here, and that didn't work out. What can we learn from that, and what's different now?
I think what we can learn is that we really need to make an area in our city that incorporates all the things that people want and need to, who live downtown, what they want and need to enjoy in a city. So people need green space. If you're going to live downtown, you can build as many apartments as you like and restaurants, but if you don't have green space, people won't want to move here. It's pretty self-evident what other cities have done with their waterfronts, and how much economic benefit just results from spending money on waterfront development.
Yeah, and I would add to that that, you know, the investments were before in small private businesses. They really weren't in the asset that is the falls and the gorge and the parks and parkland that surround that. So businesses come and go, as we all know. And I think, you know, it was a successful entertainment district for 5 or 6 years. And then when that sort of leveled off, it actually became a very successful creative district, which it is now. So the narrative changes, I think, as time goes on, and we now find ourselves with this incredible natural asset in an area of the highest office and office density in downtown Rochester. We have a 96% occupancy rate in High Falls, and now we've got people living down here, and I think that is also the key difference. There's people now living here in the new developments that have taken place on both sides of the river.
I was going to ask about that, because that certainly is a difference from, say, 20 years ago, that the downtown population, it seems like every time somebody proposes a new loft project or a new office building conversion, I'm thinking, how much can the market sustain? And it seems like people are snapping those up as soon as they hit the market.
Yeah, they are, and I think that really changes the dynamic. What also changed the dynamic, I think, in High Falls is the brewery. The Genesee Brewery has now come online as a huge part of High Falls, and the sort of going back and forth on the bridge, there really becomes a lot more engagement. Even tourists that come to visit there are stopping at the brewery. So I would say that that's another big factor in the renaissance, if you will, of High Falls.
And very shortly, we're going to see MCC bring an infusion of student population here as well. And so we're very mindful that it's almost the perfect storm of activities coming together that make this a great time to be talking about our waterfront. And there's a whole generation that's coming up that it's way more mindful of wanting to be, you know, eco-friendly and be car-free and have a walkable lifestyle. And so this eco-district, I think, is a great time to be coming online.
We're talking with Tara Boggio from the Eco-District Committee, Lisa Barron, Chair of Greentopia, and Michael Phillipson, co-founder of Greentopia. And you as well, feel free to join us at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or you can go on Twitter at Evan Dawson. We are, even though he's not here, we are still manning the account today, and we'd love to hear your input that way as well. So we're talking about MCC, we're talking about the river, we're talking about all these connections, and now there's this possibility, and this was one of the things that I understand was discussed on Wednesday, of linking all of this up with this idea of a garden aerial. Talk a little bit about what this could be and where we stand in the process of making this a reality.
Well, the garden aerial is a capital project to really add amenities, trails, attractions, and so forth around the rim of the gorge at High Falls. it's in the same light as projects that have taken place in Chattanooga, in Tulsa, Spokane, Washington, Minneapolis, and, you know, inspired, of course, by projects like the High Line, creating this sort of hub of trails and connections and destinations around the rim of the gorge at High Falls will be a real hub of connections. So that hub will connect into trails coming from the east, west, north, and south, and be a place for people to come and enjoy the sights and sounds that they're going to find at High Falls, and then also to connect into another trail to continue their ramblings around around the Rochester Riverside. So it's an amazing capital project. We've actually started construction on the first phase of that, and we are very, very excited about that. We think it will really bring new attention and vitality to the High Falls, and it will be a long time to get it all built, but we've started, and we're very much looking for people to come on board and help us create that garden.
You mentioned briefly that all of these sort of owe their inspiration to the High Line in New York, and I want to talk about the High Line for a few minutes. I had the pleasure of going and walking some of the newer portions of it just a few weeks ago on a beautiful autumn day in New York City. This is an area that was sort of a forgotten about. As you'd mentioned, Lisa, sort of an industrial zone. It had been filled with meatpacking plants and manufacturing, and there was this elevated railway that ran sort of through the middle of it, north to south, that had been abandoned, that was threatened with demolition, and then all of a sudden.
Right. So, again, just as in Greentopia, two guys had the idea that they should save it. And met with all kinds of opposition from Mayor Giuliani's administration. They found a supporter in Bloomberg who became mayor, and they had backing from the city government, which tipped the scales for them. So the High Line is now an incredible state-of-the-art greenway that you can walk on all year long, and that attracts joggers, programming, vendors. But beyond that, everyone wanted to build around it. So what used to be a very slummy kind of poor section of town that was, as you said, meatpacking and very neglected buildings have become refurbished. They're now restaurants, hotels, apartments, office buildings, and the brand new Whitney Museum is anchoring the base of the High Line now. So it's an incredible story to tell because of the economic benefits that come from green space.
And you have to see it to believe it. I was there. I made the mistake of going on a Sunday afternoon when the weather was nice. And it was just shoulder to shoulder.
Yes.
Walking around there. Everybody wanted to be there and to be part of it. And you take a look at the building, like you mentioned, that's going on around it. And there are these multi-million dollar condos that everybody wants to have the overlook onto the High Line now. And, of course, you know, every city that has even a possibility of doing something like this now wants to do it. How much can we do here? You know, you're never going to get, obviously, the kind of massive real estate money that you get in New York. What will this bring to a community the size of Rochester?
So you know what? Even if we get 1% of the billions of dollars that were invested in New York, that would be tremendous for Rochester. So, you know, that argument is that I've heard, you know, before, oh, this isn't New York City. But heck, they're doing it in Memphis. They're doing it in similarly sized cities all over the country. And yes.
And I would add that we've done some research on this, and the return on investment on these green spaces and what they actually spur on in terms of other surrounding economic development. I mean, you're talking figures 17 to 1, 20 to 1, the one in Boston, 40 to 1. It is Boston and, you know, a larger city. But still, the return on investment on these kinds of investments in green space is phenomenal. And, you know, it really, when you look at that, and you look at what we can do here and what we have to start with, that's the amazing thing. The High Line is great. They don't have a 96-foot high waterfall on the High Line. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have a rock gorge. They don't, you know, I mean, the incredible asset that we have here that we call our greatest liquid asset, the Genesee River, and the way it powers through the middle of the city. And so, you know, that's the thing that we have here that we can build on. We already have an incredible asset. Like Tara said, many of the cities that were at the Incubator Conference in Portland were really jealous of where we were starting from. So I think that is the argument.
And you've got, this is a five-phase plan that's laid out to try to make this a reality over the course of 8 years, $140 million or so. Run us through phase by phase. You talked about some of the initial work that's being done. Where can this go from here? What's being envisioned?
Well, I could start with the Flower Garden, which we're under construction now. That's sort of our phase one. It's recreation of the Browns Race, the old race in front of the Browns Race. It'll be an incredible new gathering space for the city with fountains, lights, native plantings, some green technologies built into the project. From there, we'll probably move on to the Granite Mills Park and Pont de Rennes Bridge, the sort of recreation of, or the creation of an arboretum floating above the gorge is our vision for the Pont de Rennes Bridge. Moving over to the east side parks near the brewery, possibly building something like a winter garden or some large public space for winter interest. And then the building next to the falls, which we actually happen to have bought a couple of years ago through a family foundation grant. That building we hope to build a viewing platform on. We've been out on the roof of that building several times, and it is an astounding experience when you are literally 3 feet from the edge of our falls. It's the closest you can actually get to the falls anywhere, and we can't wait till the public can have that experience, which they've not had in over 100 years.
And this is the building. There have been some structural issues that have led the offices to move out of that.
It's actually on the other side of the falls.
Oh, the other side, okay.
Yeah, with the old hydroelectric station and those towers. We've been looking at the feasibility of, you know, what we could do over there. But being that close to the falls, you can literally feel the spray and feel the rumble of the falls when you're standing on that roof. And then, of course, building a new pedestrian bridge across the falls to complete the hub trail and circle of the garden area.
Where do you stand now on getting both political support and then the funding that would flow from that for this?
I think we are in good standing. We on our critical team for the eco district, we have county representation, we have city representation, we have representation from Kodak. And from other stakeholders in our district. I think the momentum is building publicly. People are finding out more about us. I would be lying if I said that I didn't want more. So I would encourage everyone to come and visit and see the progress down on Browns Race. Just to get an idea of what this construction project looks like and in the beginning, and then come back in the spring to see the finished product. It's quite a project. It's this garden alone, this little stretch of road, is almost $1 million we're spending on a new park, basically, that everybody can enjoy. And I also would encourage you to go to the website and to view our new film. I'll let Michael talk about that.
So we have a new promotional film on our website, greentopia.org. It's also on YouTube under Greentopia Fest channel. You can see it there. But the new film really talks about the why of Garden Ariel. You know, why should we do this? Really, what is the case for the Garden Ariel? And I think the film is just, you will be very inspired by what you see there and what you hear there. Many of our city's local leaders are on that film talking about their excitement about the Garden Ariel and their support of that project. So if you go to our website, please take a look at that new film. I think you'll find it very fascinating. And it has some stunning new footage of the falls, by the way. So that alone is worth the price of seeing the film.
Mm-hmm. Drone footage?
Well, I won't say how we got it, okay. But
but it's there.
It's there,
and it's spectacular. So greentopia.org is where you will find that. How do we compare, to put us kind of in perspective with our neighbor cities upstate? Buffalo, I know there's been the huge amount of development that's happened down there with Canal Side, and with all the work that they're doing sort of at the foot of downtown Buffalo in a similar area that had been industrial and that is now being reclaimed. Where do we stand with respect to our neighbors just to the west?
I think what Buffalo has been successful with, and what they're probably a little bit more advanced with, is this idea of public-private partnerships. So to give an example, that's what saved their Olmsted Parks in the city. In a city, Buffalo, of course, was going bankrupt and was not spending money at all on their park system, which was one of the gems and jewels of the city. So private individuals, corporations, foundations stepped in to help the city and created an honest-to-goodness partnership to work with the city to save those parks and to create a new system, basically, new buildings, new programming, new amenities in those parks. I think Rochester is a little bit behind the times in that type of development of relationships with private stakeholders, but I think we can get them there. The Flower Garden is an example of a public, an honest-to-goodness public-private initiative, and the city came through.
We should mention that's Flower with a U.
Yes, Flower with a U.
Not Flower with a we. Is the laser show ever going to come back, by the way? That's something that, that those of us who remember High Falls 15 or 20 years ago, I think, still remember fondly.
Well, no, the laser show is not coming back. The lasers were sold by the city about two, three years ago, I believe. You know, it was in its time. I think it was an attraction that was for its time and in its time. It certainly brought thousands of people to High Falls here. But in the end, they were quite expensive to maintain. The shows took quite a long time to change. They were very expensive to change. And so once you had come down and seen the show, mm-hmm. you know, you really didn't want to come down until there was a new show. And that was difficult to do with that technology. We actually, at last year's Greentopia Festival, we actually did a pilot. We borrowed a projector from Stone Mountain in Georgia, and we projected actually from a laptop video and imagery on the walls. We had people take their selfie, and they would be shown on the gorge wall. And it was really a test to see if it worked, and you know, it did work. Mm-hmm. So we can bring that old feeling into the future. By you know, getting a couple of these projectors in sync along the walls, and we can change the shows as quickly as you can change a folder on a computer. I mean, it will be that easy. We're also looking at how we can make attractions on the bridge, on the Pont de Rennes Bridge, that would bring people down with new technologies of LEDs, some fountain technologies, and some other things that we're looking at as ways to, again, bring people to High Falls for nighttime shows and so forth. So we have some plans in that area.
Well, it raises that interesting question that you brought up. If it's not just bringing these attractions here, but it's having the ongoing funding to keep them fresh and to keep them interesting and to keep them maintained, which certainly, you know, you look at the funding that the High Line has put together with all the growth that they have there and with all the foliage that needs to be maintained, that's an expense. How do we, beyond the initial capital cost of doing this, what mechanisms are you looking at to try to make sure that whatever we do can still be fresh and interesting 10 or 20 years out?
Well, I think the idea, too, for us with that kind of thing is to use people that are already existing in Rochester. For instance, the High Line has master gardeners, and then they have a group of volunteers that come do a lot of the deadheading and so forth. We have things like the Rochester Civic Garden Center. We have the garden clubs. We have a lot of horticultural assets, really, that we could bring to bear on maintaining and operating the park in, again, a public-private partnership sort of way. So it's by getting that community involved in that way that I think that we'll be able to maintain into the future. Obviously, we need to fundraise and we need to have, you know, certainly the funding and the planning to keep that well maintained. But we can look to our community, I think, also for inclusion and involvement in the project.
We are talking about a green future for downtown Rochester with some of the organizers of the Greentopia Futures Summit, which just took place at MCC. Want to get you involved in the discussion as well at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. On Twitter, at Evan Dawson. I am Scott Feibusch, in for Evan Dawson. We will be right back with more of our conversation after a quick break. On Monday's Connections, Evan Dawson's back, and he'll start the week with a conversation with members of the Rochester Association of Black Journalists. Then an Ontario County filmmaker who's documenting the effect that the refugee crisis in Europe is having on hundreds of thousands of people pouring in from the Middle East and Africa. Join Evan Monday at noon on AM 1370, FM 88.5, and WXXINews.org for Connections.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
A big change to the way hospitals are paid in Maryland is creating big opportunities in public health.
Whereas before, the hospitals could really only make money by keeping the beds filled, now they could actually do better if their community is healthier.
How a new system could help solve old problems in Baltimore. Later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that'll be 4 o'clock this afternoon on your NPR News station.
And welcome back to Connections. I'm Scott Feibusch, in for Evan Dawson. We are talking about green urban development, which happens to be one of my passions from time to time as I travel. And we have with us in the studio Michael Phillipson, who's the co-founder of Greentopia, Lisa Barron, the chair of Greentopia, and Tara Boggio, who is a member of the Eco District Committee and the senior business development manager at T.Y. Lin International. Thank you all for being with us. You are here with us because of the Greentopia Futures Summit that took place just a couple of days ago at MCC, and we want to get your questions in as well. If you have questions or comments, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. On Twitter, at Evan Dawson, even though he's not here, the account still is. We hope you can join us. We were talking before the break quite a bit about the Garden Aerial Project, and before that about the Eco District at High Falls. And Tara, I want you to kind of explain the difference between the two, because they're not the same project, right?
That's right. The Eco District came out of Greentopia as another one of their initiatives. And interestingly, like the Garden Aerial Project would ironically and conveniently be located within the Eco District. But that capital project is, you know, again, a capital project. The district is all about creating a place where people can live, work, play, have mobility options, and it is, you know, right now envisioned to be a much bigger district than just High Falls. Although the boundaries are still being worked on, it right now is well over 250 acres, and it spans all the way down to Main Street and up north past the Smith Street Bridge. And it does encompass, you know, MCC and Frontier Field and things like that. So the Garden Aerial Project and the efforts at High Falls would certainly play into it, but you know, eco districts are really about balancing, you know, social health, economic health, and environmental health, with the ultimate goal of having a district that is working towards sustainability goals, you know, all together. So, you know, you're seeing green buildings, but you're also seeing mobility options. So people could live in this district and not be tied to a car. So we're going to be working with the people who provide, you know, bus service and walkability options in the city as well. So it's a much broader initiative than just the capital improvements at the High Falls.
How do you determine where to draw the boundaries for a district like that? Because you've got a lot of very socioeconomically different areas within a very tight radius of each other.
Yeah, it is a challenge. And as I said, you know, I think it is still a work in progress. And as we start to reach out to stakeholders, I think those boundaries will get more, you know, kind of nailed down. But, you know, we really want to make sure that we're encompassing, you know, residential opportunities, you know, recreational opportunities, a variety of businesses in the area. But it needs to be a manageable size, because the thing about an eco district is that it's kind of an incubator space for these green initiatives. So you need it to be able to have an impact and be manageable to kind of try on these, economic initiatives. And so we're going to keep working on it. But I think we'll get there probably in the early 2016 of kind of nailing down the final boundary.
So what are the next steps that you're taking?
Well, we're hiring a full-time coordinator who will kind of spearhead this initiative. And then we're going to start public outreach. We have a very long list of stakeholders. It's really anybody that, kind of lives, works, or plays in the city should want to be involved. But there's immediate stakeholders who are in the district or in close proximity, agencies that have an involvement. We need to look at, kind of making sure we're casting the net wide enough that we're getting the right stakeholders around the table. So that's the next step, is really to start that outreach, start the education about what we're trying to do with the eco district, and then start to look at what are going to be our performance measures. What are we going to try to achieve in this district in terms of reducing waste, reducing energy, increasing mobility options, things like that.
How are some of those transportation issues working right now? And I'm thinking especially of the changes in some of the bus routes as a result of the new transportation center that opened last year. Is that working? You know, it's just far enough over on this side of the river that it's not always a fun walk to get over there to get on a bus, for instance. So it's something like a circulator to get people to the terminal from this area. Would that be something you'd be looking at?
Yeah, I don't think anything's off the table at this point, other than we know we need to give people options. And right now, there's a good amount of public that doesn't have a lot of options. The mayor of Ithaca was one of the speakers, and he talked a lot about his own experience with not having access to personal transportation when he was a kid, and they had to walk 2 miles to get to the grocery store. And it was very telling, and it inspired him to want to become mayor, because he wanted to make sure that there are residential options where there's also environmental health and there's also mobility options, and all those things kind of come into convergence.
It's an interesting area as you get over, especially between the two stadiums. Yeah. It's a neighborhood that people come into and then they kind of go out of. So is some of the goal to keep people here longer?
Absolutely. It's to capture that. And we certainly want to capture the population and the intelligence of what's going to be going on at MCC. We want to get that student population to the district, but also engaged in the district, and have them be an active part, have it be part of their learning environment, really.
Right, and the way that the preliminary lines of the eco district are drawn right now is that the district bumps up against the innovation district near Sibley, and the idea is, the eco district would be the cool place to live, and the innovation district would be the cool place to work in Rochester. So that we're kind of working together with Jim Sinnall and the incubator, the innovation incubator, to try to generate that synergy between the two districts.
And you walk through some of the pieces of the Garden Ariel project on your way from one to the other?
Absolutely. You follow the new trails along the river right to your doorstep.
And we should mention, too, going northwards along the river, some of the real undiscovered gems that I think a lot of people, even locally, aren't aware of. What's being done with some of the areas as you move north along the river?
I think you're talking possibly about the Sun Troop properties, and there's a large property there, a former Bausch & Lomb glass grinding plant, some Argini gasification areas. They're pretty highly polluted right now.
We had a question, too, from Maddie V on Twitter about what the status is of BB Station.
Yes, BB Station is now being demolished. They have abated most of that building, I believe, of chemicals and asbestos and things like that. And I think that they're going online to come down toward the spring. Is that what I think that might be the timetable, although I'm not sure. You can actually go on their website at RG&E, and they do have a whole plan of what they're going to do over there at the BB station and timetable. So that would be somewhere where she could go and find that out, yeah.
Okay, and then further north, you'd mentioned some of these other areas.
Yeah, they're brownfields, and we are looking at those areas and trying to figure out how they might come to play in the eco district model, what could actually be put on those areas is there funding available through brownfield cleanup opportunities and so forth to really bring those areas back, because they're right along the river, again, where the public has not had access in nearly a century. So it's getting the public back, getting that land back to public use somehow, and getting the public much more engaged with our river.
I suspect Genesee alone has brought people back to that area in a way that...
It's incredible. Yeah. Right outside our offices, we're there every day, and we see an ever-increasing amount of people moving back and forth across the Pont d'Arène.
I can imagine. We are talking about downtown green development and near downtown green development, and we are talking with Michael Phillipson, the co-founder of Greentopia, Lisa Barron, the chair of Greentopia, and Tara Boggio, who is on the Eco District Committee, and you as well at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 on Twitter, at Evan Dawson. One of the things that we notice working where we do every day here at WXXI and looking out the window up the street, that I'm wondering how this is going to affect what's happening, particularly in the Eco District, is the fate of Kodak. Randy Gorman, our news director, is working on a story for this afternoon about Kodak's latest quarterly report, which shows another decline in sales for them. And it raised the question earlier today in the newsroom, what's going to become of the rest of that building as it apparently continues to become too big for the size of the Kodak is? We know MCC is going into a piece of it. We know that there's already been pieces of it that have spun off to Carestream behind it. How much of a concern is that enormous piece of commercial property right in the middle of this?
Well, we're in close contact with Kodak, and they have about 1.5 million square feet of space now available. I think most of the Kodak employees have now moved into the tower. But, you know, this offers a great opportunity. And we think, and of course we at Greentopia think, that it would be an incredible opportunity for the Eco District to really become the eco center of Rochester, of the city of Rochester. There will be an innovation center right next to this eco center. And if that square footage could be taken up as incubator space or other kind of space for emerging green companies or emerging green technologies, that might be a great use for that space, we think. So we would really like to see that space become even more useful for the sort of eco-centric area that the Eco District will represent.
Anybody else want to tackle that? I know it's a big what-if right now.
It is a big what if, and Kodak has a lot of real estate still in Rochester, aside from the Eastman Business Park. We would love to engage them and help them, and I think the whole city should help them with finding out and perhaps encouraging. Businesses to look at Kodak's property, because we personally got a tour of the facility here close to the studio, you know, the tower plus the remaining business offices, and quite honestly the space is beautiful. It really is, and very versatile. So
it's amazing for so many of us who didn't work at Kodak. I look at that building and it's a mystery inside.
It's gorgeous.
I've never really been in it, aside from the lobby. We go to the phones at 844-295-TALK. And Maureen in Rochester, you're on Connections.
Thank you. I'm wondering what the plans are to make it more successful than the previous Browns Race project.
Interesting. It's still something, obviously, that weighs on the memories of people in Rochester who lived through that whole project. So you had mentioned earlier that one of the differences was that this is not a public-private investment quite so much.
Well, no, I think that this is a very public investment. You know, the thing that happened before in Brown's Race is a lot of money was put into infrastructure and so forth, and then private companies, bars, restaurants, nightclubs came in, but there really wasn't anyone living here at the time. It was sort of a place people went into and then came out of. And once those bars waned in their popularity and so forth, there really wasn't much else here to hold people, because the natural assets had not been developed as much as the private assets. So I think what's very different is that we're really about developing a very public asset. It's about getting everything back to the public, and we think once that happens and people start gathering here and people start coming here, that the private business will be attracted by this, and you know, somebody will want to put up restaurants and ice cream stands and whatever else they want to do here to attract people. But then you have a more holistic sort of development versus just private enterprise that's in here and then gone.
Is it fair to say in the course of say 20 years or so, have public attitudes towards developments like this changed too? I mean, it's amazing to me as I travel around to see the cities where things are being done that were unimaginable a generation earlier. I think one of you had mentioned Boston before, and I lived there through the whole Big Dig and the reconstruction of the Central Artery, and it's a whole different universe there now compared to what it was. Is that something where just the times having changed makes this potentially more successful than its predecessor?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a change in attitude, and you know, kind of building on what Michael said, I think it's starting with what's authentic about the district rather than trying to create something from nothing. And so that's, you know, why I think it'll be different. I mean, I, like you said at the onstart, I've lived here my whole life, and you know, besides going there when it was an entertainment district, again, you went there because of the building that was there, not because of the environment it was in. So I think this is just different, and it's going to be more authentic, and it's going to start with that, but then it's going to build out from there. So I think you will naturally have other draws besides just the falls, but it's going to start with that environmental side.
Excellent. We have a bunch of callers lined up and not a lot of time to get to them, so I'll ask that you try to keep the questions and answers relatively brief. Ruth in Rochester, you are on Connections.
Thank you. Very quickly, I just wondered if there are any plans to bring back that wonderful little historical museum at High Falls, and also whether anybody's looking at parking for better access to the Pont de Rennes.
Good questions. Thanks for the call.
And I will go off the phone and listen to you on the air.
All right. Thanks.
Well, let's start with the parking question. There actually is a quite large parking garage right at the corner of Mill Street and Commercial Street. That actually for nighttime activities and so forth would be still quite viable for people to come down here and visit. We're also looking at the Kodak parking lots. They have a lot of lots over there. Maybe those could be repurposed. And what was the first part of the question? I'm sorry.
About the museum.
And the museum has been open on and off. We're trying to work with the city and the county library system to see if maybe Greentopia could have a hand in getting that museum more online. We're actually developing a mobile tour for High Falls that you can take with your smartphone, and you'll be able to actually get a lot of interpretation that way. So we are really trying to make sure that the historical aspects of the area remain alive.
All right. Carlene in Rochester, I think your question kind of relates to some of that as well, does it not?
Hello?
Hi, yes, you're on.
Oh, yes. The biggest problem that has happened over two decades was lack of cooperation with the city. It wasn't the private developers per se. It was that the city and various people could not get together with one purpose. And now if they have more of a focus, this might work out. But back in the day, I remember the building at the Point was owned by Wally Craft, and he had a full carousel upstairs, and they were going to put rooms for people doing business, a small mini hotel downstairs, all of these things, and the city would not cooperate by putting a sewer connection in. I mean, it was ridiculous. Granted, it cost money, but it was so short-sighted. So what we need now is for more cooperation with the city, and for instance, the Kodak building, I've seen it where people have taken that very square building, and they have taken and cut back into the building and made innumerable balconies so that then the building becomes less industrial, more residential or whatever, and more people-friendly. So if you can get the cooperation of people in the city that hold the purse to cooperate with your project, it's taken all this time, but congratulations, and let's see how we can get the the politicians behind you because they hold the purse strings also.
Good point. Thanks, Carleen.
Yeah, I just, you know, it was very nice when the critical team was put together for the Eco District that two senior staff from the city of Rochester have been involved and went out to Portland with us. And so the city has shown involvement and investment in the Eco District. They themselves have just finished their green roof project not too long ago. They have a sustainability coordinator. So the city, I think, has been engaged in looking at, environmentally sensitive projects like this and have showed a great deal of support so far.
Interloop, too.
Yep.
Can't leave that out as far as all these projects working together end up going. Steve in Brighton, I believe you had you'd called in earlier with a question. Are you there, Steve?
Yes, I had, Mr. Feibusch. Good afternoon.
Greetings.
So just during the talk of the High Line, something kind of got left out was the history there is there was, by the time they finally got momentum to move it forward, the meatpacking district had already become, you know, the kind of standard creative district, hip bar type of thing that helped make people want to move down there to begin there, which is what helped finally have them win Bloomberg over when Giuliani hadn't been won over. So the fact that that's starting to happen in High Falls to kind of support these projects is also kind of a key factor. It's just all I wanted to put in.
Good point. Appreciate
Thanks.
The comments.
Yeah, and I would say to that we are seeing our developers in Rochester have been very gutsy, and I think they're taking on difficult projects, you know, right in this eco district and beyond. We have one of the developers on our eco district critical team, Craig Webster, and he's doing quite a few projects right in this district, and many other developers in the Rochester area are repurposing these buildings and taking on the difficult projects and trying to make them as green as possible. So we're very fortunate.
Yeah, and I would also add to that the timing is right. So much of this project is about timing. If we had tried to do this maybe 10 years ago, I don't think we might be exactly where we are. Much like the High Line, they had timing and things that aligned with their mission and purpose. We are actually experiencing the same thing here, I think, in Rochester, and it's an exciting time. I think it's exciting that many of these projects and desires and opportunities are now aligning to actually make them happen.
I had mentioned the Interloop previously. I mean, there's so much that's going on around the city. Put all this in context with everything that's happening, you know, the development in the South Wedge that's going on. I mean, this is really, I get the impression driving around. Am I wrong to think there's just a lot happening right now in general? Midtown, that whole redevelopment project?
I agree, Scott. I think that the stars are aligning and that people want to come back downtown. And, you know, I'm old enough to have 20-plus-year-olds, and they really don't want to live in the suburbs. They want to live downtown again, and they don't want to have to drive. Believe it or not, I recently got a call from my daughter who was at the beer fest at the public market, and nobody had a car, and they needed to go somewhere else. And so these, you know, 27-year-olds are calling their mother to come and pick them up. So if they live downtown, they would need to call their mothers. They could just walk.
Well, yeah, and I also think we're seeing a confluence of empty nesters and both younger people that want to, both demographics that want to live in the city, and the empty nesters are, you know, from the baby boom that's now getting to that point. So you're seeing a confluence again of a lot of desires and demographics coming together to make cities great again, including, you know, emerging Rust Belt cities and cities that have been in, look at Detroit. Mm-hmm. They are going off the map with the activity in a city that really did hit rock bottom. And we had one of the best speakers at our conference was Rebecca Salmon and Witt from the Greening of Detroit, and she was talking about this phenomenon, and I think we are experiencing the same thing here.
Cleveland. My gosh, Cleveland. Yeah. You look at what they've done. Even Toledo. I went to their downtown ballpark over the summer, and that was a great experience. We have time for one more call here at least before we get to the end of the hour. George in Rochester, you're on Connections.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
My wife and I recently moved here from New York City, and we're very excited about what's going on. In fact, we're neighbors of Greentopia. We live on Brown's Race, and we're excited to see the project across the street. In fact, we were excited to see the festival area redone. But my concern is that festival area, for instance, was beautifully done looked great when it was done, and not a single bit of maintenance has been done since then. So it's now totally overgrown. All the plantings are just obscured. There's graffiti all over. Is there a plan to maintain that green area across the street from our apartment and the bridge? Because I think maintaining it, picking up the trash, et cetera, really will make a big difference.
Yeah,
I'll take your answer off the air.
Right. Thanks for calling.
You know, that's one thing that we often talk with the city about, who, you know, maintenance, operations. And Greentopia actually has a maintenance plan in place for the Flower Garden, our new development at High Falls. I think that the idea is that eventually Greentopia or the consortium taking care of High Falls or the conservancy that becomes will take over maintenance and operations from the city. The city really, you know, has limited funds for maintenance. We've seen that time and time again in many other areas of the city. And so it's going to take that public-private, again, to help us maintain these things. The area that you're talking about was actually done by the city, so they're really responsible for maintaining that. We hope that one day Greentopia will be able and have the funding and the resources to maintain all of the areas around the Garden Aerial Project and, you know, even helping with maintenance further in even into the eco-district. So I think, though, that is going to take a public-private effort to get that done.
All right. Very briefly, because we're down to our final minutes, we haven't mentioned Green Visions yet. Lisa, if you want to explain briefly what that's about.
Yeah. So earlier in the conversation, we were talking about how are we going to maintain these gardens and these new developments, these new green developments. Green Visions was created by Greentopia to train the horticulturists of the future who will help us with the maintaining of our projects. So it's a program that takes place in the Josana neighborhood. And so much of the Josana neighborhood has vacant lots, you know, houses that have been torn down by the city, and the lots have just been barricaded and left to grow wild. And no one is allowed to grow anything on them. Uh-oh. Anyway, it's a workforce development program, and we've employed 16 youth right in the neighborhood who are learning how to grow beautiful flowers.
Fantastic. Thank you so much to Michael Phillipson, Lisa Barron, and Tara Boggio, who are involved with Greentopia and the Eco District Committee. Greentopia.org is where you find the information on it. Yes. All right. I'm Scott Feibusch in for Evan Dawson. He will be back on Monday. Our thanks to John Andrus in the control room and Megan Mack, our producer. This is Connections, here member-supported public radio.